One bourbon, one scotch. Don't forget that beer. Today is a special day, Bill.
It's the anniversary, the 83rd anniversary, Wendy, of the end of Prohibition.
And we're going to find out all about it. On the line with us right now, Dr. E.K. Prescott. You have been an educator for, what, almost 30 years, taught at the college level for the past 15 years, and you have written several books, and now we're going to talk about the 83rd anniversary of the end of Prohibition. How are you doing, Dr. Prescott?
Well, I'm warmer than you guys.
Yeah,
I'm in Arizona.
Oh, you got it made in the shade. We had like 6 to 8 inches here of snow.
It's cold here, Dr. Prescott, but it's a dry cold. We'll be fine. Don't you worry about us.
Hey, I've lived in Wisconsin for 15 years, so.
You know cold.
I'm
you know what cold's
I'm
like.
Gone. Yep. Yes.
I can
yes.
hear that in your voice with the Wisconsin. It kind of fit in perfectly. All right, amendments. I'm not very good with remembering all the amendments, but I know the 18th Amendment was one of the only amendments to be repealed in the entire U.S. history. Is that a fact?
Yes, that is true. Before and after the amendment, the appeal amendment was actually the 21st Amendment, and it was a constitutional amendment, which is the reason you had to repeal it. Unlike the laws with marijuana, which is a federal law, not an amendment, and it's given to the states. So basically, it was an amendment to curb drinking.
And some of the fallacies that were out there, for instance, too much alcohol could make you explode. These are one of the fallacies that actually led to the passing of the 18th Amendment, which prohibited the production, distribution, and sale of alcohol. Is that true?
Well, that's a myth. Yeah, actually, it was the temperance leagues, and there were several of them. And they combined together, and they were called organization was called DRY, go figure. Mm-hmm. And they thought, along with alcohol, you had ragtime and dancing and alcohol, and this is all satanic, you know. And
I call it fun. They may call it satanic.
I know. And it was going to corrupt the families, you know, and we're going to have a lot of crime. So the Anti-Saloon League, believe me or not, helped write the bill. And the bill is actually called the Volstead Act. And it became a law. Now, you got to remember here, you couldn't sell it, you couldn't make it, and you couldn't buy it. But you could drink it.
Well, how are you supposed to get it?
Well, it was all illegal, of course. But believe me, our ancestors were very savvy in their ways. And one of the ways was a prescription for liquor. And you would go to the doctor, and the doctor loved it this time because they were getting lots of patients. And for some bogus thing like tuberculosis. And you can actually see real prescriptions at this time on the web. You can find them. It costs way too much money. But you could get a prescription to get liquor.
So you would have to have a doctor
like
sign
marijuana.
Off. Similar to, well, yeah, I guess it is kind
like
of similar to
marijuana.
What's going on with medical marijuana. But you'd have to convince a doctor to somehow sign off on the fact that whatever ailment you have, liquor would clear it up, essentially, right?
Well, you didn't actually have to convince them.
Oh.
It was, you know, this is how you got it. You would go. It was a known practice. It wasn't you had to have the disease, okay?
Oh.
You just would go and get the prescription, and then you could go get liquor. The most kind of liquor that was drank then was gin, though there was rum and vodka and other things.
Yeah.
But how do you get it, even with a prescription, if no one's allowed to sell it?
Pharmacies would have it, right?
Yeah, it's a prescription. Pharmacies have it. You go, just like medical marijuana. You get a prescription from the doctor, and you go to the pharmacy, and you get it. Hmm.
And what were the problems with alcohol being completely illegal? There were problems.
Oh, yes. One of the reasons it was repealed was because of the many problems, not to mention one of them being that it cost $11 billion for the government to try and track down all the criminals as well as the taxes that they lost. That was just one of them. Another one was the rise of crime. And, it, you know, right in Chicago, you have lots of mobs. And you have the Italian mob, the Irish mob, the Jewish mob, and gangs. And there were some very strong gangs, one called the Purple Gang out of Detroit. And that's where this all started. But after Prohibition, okay, alcohol was, you could drink it, no problem. So then they went to drugs and prostitution and the like.
Yeah.
All right. So if medical marijuana is legal in some states, not all of them, but do you see it becoming legal in all of the states, even not for medical reasons, but for recreational use? Won't that eliminate some of the problems that alcohol, when it was illegal, had?
Yes. You're right on target with that. It's going to eventually be legalized state by state, but instead of a constitution amendment, it's a federal law by states, and they can vote on it state by state. Where the amendment was repealed, the 21st Amendment, there were 38 states that ratified it. So it's just a different policy, a way in politics that you go through legalizing it. But it's just the same, almost the same type of experience that we went through in America through Prohibition. For example, you could make what they call bathtub gin at home, and you can grow marijuana at home. I mean, there's very many similarities.
Do you think, Dr. Prescott, that because we had Prohibition and it lasted 14 years, it went from 1919 to 1933, do you think the fact that it was a taboo thing to have, did that make it more attractive to American consumers, do you think?
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, when you can't have it,
you want more.
I want it.
Yeah.
And just the same with legal marijuana becomes a big thing now, you know. And so you want more. One of the things that happened with distributing illegally was the diluting of regular drinks, gin, vodka, with grain alcohol or methanol. And this killed people. We had an alcohol poisoning epidemic, especially in New York. And I don't think many people know about that. It was at epidemic proportions. You could go blind, have a heart attack, have kidney failure, coma, brain damage.
Why wouldn't they just water it down like, you know, some unnamed kids used to do when they used to maybe go into their parents' liquor cabinet and take some vodka and then put water in to make it look like it was full? Why didn't they use some just water?
Well, because the alcohol itself had to be replaced. And they used grain alcohol. Okay, it wasn't necessarily always gin or like for bathtub gin. Okay,
yeah,
you make it with grain alcohol and water and a little flavors. Okay? That stuff will kill you. And they sold it. Women made it at home. You know, it doesn't have any smell. And so alcohol drinks started being made with grain alcohol or methanol.
And somebody's butt was in that bathtub, I'll just have everybody know.
Whose? Do you know whose?
No.
You don't know who.
Well, you know what? Bathtub gin wasn't made in the bathtub, okay?
That was
silly
just a
me.
Phrase.
It was a crazy name.
Yeah.
No. It was made in a big bottle, okay?
Yeah.
And it only took about 3 hours, but it was too large to fit under the sink. So they took it to the bathtub and filled it with water in the bathtub.
Ah. How about that? Despite the name.
So there was no butt.
No, don't worry, Wendy. Butt-free alcohol. Dr. E.K. Prescott is our guest. She's written.
Are you drinking right now, doctor?
No, probably not.
No.
Not now.
I think he is. He's got a cold. He needs a prescription.
Dr. Prescott's book is The Ivy League Chronicles, Nine Squares. When we return, Dr. Prescott, Kevin, our producer, asked me a great question to ask you. He's too shy, but I'll relay that question. It's a great
Aww.
Question. Stick around. We've got more ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Today, December 5th, marks the 83rd anniversary of the end of Prohibition, an era that had lasting impact on American society. The effects are still felt today, and on the line with us is Dr. Prescott, an educator, an author, and I don't know, is this someday you celebrate by tipping a cold one?
Oh, of course.
Or a couple?
Wine is my, I like wine.
Mm-hmm. Are you red or white?
Oh,
red or white wine?
White, Zinfandel.
Good
white.
Choice. We
I
have a
like
list.
Chardonnay.
I'm a red wine drinker, actually.
Oh,
Bill,
yeah.
What about you both?
The wine spritzer, Wendy. Huge fan. Love the wine spritzer.
We have a caller who has a question for you, Dr. Prescott, and we'd like you to meet Rich. Rich, Dr. Prescott.
Oh, hi. Yeah, so those coins during Prohibition, is Anheuser-Busch, one of their businesses to keep them open was they were selling yeast for baking purposes, but yeast, as we all know, is also used to make beer. And the funny thing is right on the packet, it said, warning, do not mix this yeast with the other ingredients for beer. Boil with water to this temperature. If you do, it'll create an intoxicating beverage. So basically, they're saying, here's the recipe for beer, but don't use it. I mean, the only way I could think of something in modern times is, you know how now there's restrictions on cold pills because you can make meth out of it?
Yeah.
It would be like buying cold pills and on the back of the cold pill saying, warning, don't crush this pill and mix it with all these other chemicals because if you do, you're going to make an illegal drug. It's like, okay, then maybe you shouldn't tell people how to do that right on the package. That's how we know people were making their own, well, obviously we do, but it was a joke. I mean, they're saying, here's how you make your own booze, but don't do it.
And Dr. Prescott, do you know about that?
Yes, I do, but not as much information as he provided for me. That's real interesting. I'm going to look that up some more. I do know, however, actually I heard it on Fox News, that the Bush Budweiser.
Anheuser-Busch?
Anheuser-Busch. Anheuser-Busch. After Prohibition, they were given the Clydesdales by someone to the Anheuser-Busch family. So that's how the Clydesdales became
how about
part
that?
Of the...
Very interesting. Yeah. Rich, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich. All right, here's a question. Our producer, Little Kevin, has this, but he's too embarrassed to ask, so I'll just ask. He wanted to know that without Prohibition would a guy like Al Capone have reached any prominence? He needed there to be Prohibition for him to be as popular and as important a figure as he was, right?
Oh, yes, because he was, became part of the crime family, and that's how Prohibition, that's how liquor was moved. But I'll give you a little side story on that. John Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy, and his father owned a lot of breweries and saloons in Boston before Prohibition. But right, at Prohibition, all of a sudden it's illegal to sell. So one of their companies moved to Canada, and it was called the Silk Hat Cocktail Company, of all things. And he would distribute or bring it over through Detroit. And Al Capone was one of the people that helped him move his liquor.
So was that a huge issue when John F. Kennedy decided to run for president, the fact that his dad had ties to Al Capone? Did that come up much?
Yeah,
I would think.
Well, one of the conspiracies, too, is that, it was a mob hit.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
It definitely is. All right, now, in your book,
go ahead.
You've written this new book. It's called The Ivy League Chronicles, Nine Squares. How does all this fit into the book, Dr. Prescott, and the Prohibition end of it?
Well, thank you for asking.
Sure.
I am writing a series called the Ivy League Chronicles, and obviously it works with Ivy League schools. And it is set in New Haven, Connecticut, in downtown New Haven, Connecticut. There is a park, and it's divided up into nine squares, okay? There's a unique history to that park, though, and it's... right next to Yale University. So the story setting is there, but the background history is 1920s, and it starts in 1923 during the summer and ends, the first book ends with Harding dying on August 3rd. no one ever really knows how he died. But and this, each book will take you then, sequentially through the time period, and have a mystery and fit with the things that happen in history.
Sounds good. Now, how about this really quick? I'm curious. The Roaring Twenties, when you think about the Roaring Twenties, you think about the city that we're in right now, Chicago. Was there any more city in America that was more defiant when it came to not having alcohol but finding a way to somehow get alcohol despite it being illegal than Chicago?
Oh, man. You know, you had speakeasies pop up on every corner. You had the other thing that the restaurants did is cocktails. Became invented, so you could order a cocktail.
Yeah,
but it had gin, like the Bee's Knees had gin and honey and lemon juice in it. But you ordered a cocktail; you didn't order liquor.
Right.
And it was a roaring town, Chicago.
And the story I always heard was the reason Chicago was like that was that the cops, for the most part, were kind of on the take. That for a couple of bucks, they'd look the other way, and you could drink all you wanted.
That's one of the long-lasting outcomes, actually, of Prohibition, is this started this, I guess, evolution of cops being on the take.
Yeah.
And they do that with marijuana. So that was one of the outcomes of Prohibition. Yes. Could get away with a lot of things.
All right, we have another caller.
I even went to our... Oh, excuse me.
No, that's okay. Chris wanted to jump in with a comment. Hi, Chris. This is Dr. E.K. Prescott.
Hi, doctor. I just wanted to say that I was a nurse at St. Francis in Evanston, and we had a very frail old lady, and her doctor ordered her to have a beer every night. And they would call it in the medical, in our charting, spirits of fermente, and we would give her a beer every night.
And so the doctor ordered her a beer.
True.
You know,
a beer, and they called it Spirits of Fermente.
Boy, getting the Latin usage in there.
Yes.
I'm going to call my beers that from now on. Honey, get me a cold Spirits of Fermente from the refrigerator, please.
Wink, wink, wink.
Chris, thank you so much. I did not know what...
The legal beer...
Go on.
The legal beer was called... It was called Near Beer, and they sold that. Near beer had 1.05 alcohol.
So still enough to feel a little something, but not enough to get you drunk, right?
No, you'd have to drink a heck of a lot.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right, do you guys know what the term speakeasy comes from? Because I was curious when you mentioned that. Bill, you're nodding yes.
You had to be quiet so that people around you weren't onto the fact that you were there at a bar.
You're really smart, aren't you?
Well,
I'm sorry, I had no idea.
Know.
It's an unlicensed saloon, dates back to 1889, and it from the origin of speak and easy, so-called from the practice of speaking quietly about such a place in public or when inside it so as not to alert the police or neighbors. And then the word gained wide currency in the United States during Prohibition.
Right, but usually cops were paid off, too. And the bartenders knew when they were coming, and when the raid came, they just kind of flipped everything over.
Everything seemed to be on the up and up. Yeah.
How fun.
Brilliant. Sure.
It was like Batman, you know, the bookcase would turn around and there's a whole other room there.
Yeah. That's how it was.
That's right.
Well, Dr. Prescott, a great job both with the history of Prohibition and with the new book. It's called The Ivy League Chronicles. The new one is called Nine Squares, and that's available now.
Yes, you can buy it on Amazon, and I do have a website or Facebook if anyone wants
sure.
to continue the conversation. So it's just easier to Google me, E.K. Prescott, and you'll find more information than you ever wanted to know about me.
Excellent.
Raise the spirits of fermenti with me tonight, will you please?
That's
a yes.
I like that. I'm going to look that up.
It was so nice talking to you. You're a fun woman.
Thank you. And thank you for being such gracious host.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thanks, Dr. Prescott. All right, a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.